Hello. So there was a Kickstarter campaign, as I remember, in 2018, and I bought a copy of something that I thought was a graphic novel called Metal Made Flesh, and I got a very nice, cute book that had some nice drawings on it. And the first thing that I felt was I was disappointed and I should throw it away, but it had a very nice card on it signed, and I said, okay, let me give it a second chance. And after, a year, 2019, 2020, I started reading the first page, and I was like, hey, this thing is actually really, really good, but I don't have time now. Last 3 weeks, I grabbed it, I started reading it, I couldn't stop. I had the feeling that, hey, the Greek audience needs to know about these people, the work is great. And yesterday I had the second installment, which is a graphic novel. And with that, we have the creators of Metal Made Flesh. So, hi.
Hello.
Oh, hi.
So, you are Jeremy and Sid.
Ian, yeah.
Jeremy does the story and Sid does the artwork.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's actually a little more collaborative in that Simeon contributes, has his own story ideas as well. And so it's very, very collaborative how we work with the story. So my role really is to tell it well, come up with story ideas. Also, Simeon has kind of a vision about where he wants to go. So he then provides me with more ideas. And it's different from kind of a traditional writer and comic artist relationship in that it's much more collaborative.
You are both working on the industry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any works that that are more mainstream, or that, what are your day jobs? Let me ask this way.
So I less kind of work on other people's stuff. I tend to work on my own, but Simeon's worked with, well, I'll let Sim tell you who he's worked with.
Okay. Mostly last few years, so I've been working with Heavy Metal magazine. I've been doing stories. I did one with Grant Morrison, I think 2016. It was called Option 3. It was a short story. And then I did one with the rock bands Motley Crue, and Liam Moore was writing. And since then I've contributed to the Megadeth anthology comic book graphic novel thing called Death by Design. And I also did a Def Leppard short for Heavy Metal. And I was also featured on the, my artwork was featured on the front and back cover for issue 294. And, I've done a few other projects and stuff. Did something with Dan Fogler from Walking Dead and Fantastic Beasts called Brooklyn Gladiator. I did 25 pages for that. Just most recently I've been working with a friend called Jason Turner. We did a collaboration, I did the art on his book, The Chrome Angel Murders. And so that's kind of been, I've mostly just been doing cyberpunk stuff, and Metal Made Flesh was kind of the gateway, got me noticed and stuff.
What is Metal Made Flesh for someone who just heard the title right now?
Well, Metal Made Flesh is a cyberpunk space opera. It's a little bit like Game of Thrones meets Blade Runner. It's basically about the last remnants of humanity who've been chased to the brink of extinction, and they're taking refuge on kind of a distant cyberpunk world where they're immigrants, and they're basically treated as the lowest of the low. Basically centres around three main characters. You've got Isabel Weiss, who's kind of a cyborg, who's losing more and more of her humanity with each upgrade. You've got Phaon Nex, who, I don't want to give away too many spoilers, but he's basically an assassin trapped in the body of a small synthetic child. And then you've got Calibos, who's, again, don't want to give away too many spoilers, but he's basically a mutant war machine. So that's probably where I'll leave that one, because, like I said, I don't want to give away too much about the story on that one. But, so they basically, the first book is three independent stories where they're separate. And then throughout the series, the stories become more and more intertwined until it actually becomes one narrative.
And how did you start thinking about it? Like, what was the spark? Because it has some interesting, like, that the humanity is at the verge of extinction and somewhere else.
Mm. So Simeon, when I first met Simeon, he had a short story that he'd written. Just this incredible artwork, and the ideas were really good. It's called Hunters. So we basically took that away and said, well, you know, we want to develop this and kind of create more of it. So really then initially I was just going to publish it and edit it and stuff. We were working with another writer, but he, for one reason or another, he had kind of other priorities that he wanted to work on. So I ended up writing a treatment for one story that Simeon had a kind of skeletal structure for, and that became Flesh. And then from there, basically, we had a beginning, middle and end worked out for the whole story arc, which was kind of in the original Hunters, or based on kind of the Hunters book. And then really, it's just really kind of making it a bit more, bringing a bit more depth and complexity to the characters and, you know, the story and all that kind of stuff.
I think originally, like, I started with the Isabel Weiss character. This was way back, early 2000s. I think in part it was inspired by a Bjork video by Chris Cunningham called All Is Full of Love. It's like a beautifully shot video with sort of Bjork is like this animatronic sort of android being built as she sings the song. And that's kind of where that, so the character came first, and then I just started, I was working in the call centre at the time, and then during downtime and stuff, I'd just be there doodling on the back of memos and whatnot. And I just started just developing these characters in this world, and it sort of grew on the back of memos, and then it turned into what Jeremy's talking about, the hunters. It just kind of went from there, so I'd say that I've always been into like cyberpunk and like Blade Runner and Ghost in the Shell, stuff like that, so the inspiration was there, but I don't know, it's just kind of grew out of that character, really.
I want to ask you this, what attracts us so much into cyberpunk dystopias? I had that when I read as a kid, Neuromancer. Even with your, or not even, and in your work, and in other cyberpunk, I think that a part of me wants to be there. And I think like a part of my soul is left on your book, actually. I really do. I don't want to be, you know, sound pompous. What do you think attracts us there so much?
I don't know. For me, I've always been fascinated with the idea of the sort of the classic science fiction storytelling and the allegories and metaphors and stuff, and telling a story, whether it's like an actual story itself or the visual storytelling of characters and world building and things like that. And I just like the fusion of how you can sort of project an image and like, you know, for example, like Star Wars has got, it's not cyberpunk, from a sort of production design point of view, you can kind of, the visuals, you can see where the inspiration comes from, and it's kind of like an amalgamation of various different time periods and cultures and things like that. But with cyberpunk, I suppose you have like the sort of the future noir kind of sort of thing where it's sort of dirty tech, and it's instead of like a bright future, it's like they have all this amazing technology, but it's a sort of drab sort of world. I don't know, it's just interesting. Amongst all the genres, I find it one of the most compelling and interesting ones.
I think it's one which is very prescient for now. I mean, I think certainly since the 80s, and I kind of think of like William Gibson when he's saying that Neuromancer was kind of influenced by Japan and the impact of technology upon human beings. Yeah, it's just kind of the influence. So at the moment, I think none of that's gone away. It's not been resolved or anything. And I think people more than anything are questioning their relationship with technology. You know, it's the classic kind of Blade Runner theme, isn't it? You know, what makes a human being, you know, what makes the difference between a human being and a machine? I think all these questions still haven't been resolved, and they're still fascinating, you know. So I think that's the, and aesthetically as well, people like that kind of rainy neon noir look, just, you know, rooted in the, you know, those kind of noir movies from the, you know, 40s and 50s and stuff, but also kind of, so you've got that kind of detective who brings you into this new world with full of criminals and, you know, corporations and things, and it's just kind of like an exploded version of the world we live in today, and it's interesting to see it in this kind of cartoonish form in stories, and, you know, which is so different in terms of themes and things from anything which came prior to the 1970s, you know. So yeah, I mean, I think that's really where the fascination lies.
For me, could be a little bit personal. It was like a bad place, but the geeks could win, and maybe because I was a geeky kid, I was like, yeah, but then I can win. Yeah, before I ask you about other related things, just how did you work together in the design process, although you mentioned it?
With the first book, so the first book kind of, I think, laid some of the groundwork. So we had this kind of structure for Hunters, and we kind of talked about all the different things that we wanted to work on and kind of what we wanted in the toolbox and what we kind of wanted to play around with. And Simeon then said, oh, what about this idea and what about this idea? And I then kind of integrated that into Flesh. I think the next one I wrote was Made. And that was really kind of what I took. So there was a story which was much more about Calibos, which was very similar. And I said, well, what about if we do this, this and this instead of what was in there originally? Because I thought we could try and make it a bit more expanded and a bit more into kind of the world kind of thing. I basically went away and then kind of wrote a first draft, I think. And then Simeon said, well, that bit's good, that bit's not so good. You know, and I really like that bit, or I don't like that bit, you know. So we'd kind of work like that. So he'd kind of be editing me and chipping in ideas, and I'd go away and kind of revise it. Then with Metal, we knew kind of where Isabel had to be. Again, it's that kind of thing, really. We kind of know where the direction travel, and then just basically fit, I'm kind of like banging away at the track to try and get them before the train arrives, you know. And then Simeon sometimes as well will do a piece of artwork, and I'll say, oh, that's awesome, I can imagine a story for that, or a theme for it, you know. So it's very, very collaborative. On the second book, we started working with other writers as well. So we worked with Cy Deeth and did the final piece of me in two, I forgot, man. It was, yeah. Mm-hmm. So he then came in, and Cy is a writer who I really respect. I kind of think he's kind of an undiscovered great comic writer, if you know what I mean. He's done some things of his own, but he's never kind of, well, he did do Starship Troopers as well, but he never really kind of broken into the mainstream, if you like. But yeah, he's a really great writer and loved his work. We just asked him to submit a script for us, and we thought, oh, this is amazing, we've got to do something with it. And that's in the second book with Gary Erskine. So yeah, that's pretty much how we kind of work. So when it comes to the graphic novels, then Simeon and I act more like showrunners on a TV show where we're kind of...
We prepared a Bible, didn't we? More like a Bible, so we could get all the other writers and artists kind of on the same page, visually and like story-wise and stuff, so everyone knew, you know, what the boundaries were. You couldn't have like time travel or like anything too sort of out of the circle.
So the Bible is a guide for other writers that want to write in this universe?
Just to make sure people don't stray too far, either visually or conceptually.
Very interesting concept. And the books that you have published are three, I don't remember right now, there are three and the Bible.
I think there's, is it not called up, I'm sorry, the other separate one?
Deception, yeah. So there's three main books, there's Deception and the Bible.
Okay, these are available from your shop, both digital and in print.
Yes, that's correct. God, you're making me ask now. So it's been a while since I've been on, actually put the new stock on. I think Deception is only physical, so you can't get a digital download of that. But I think of the three books you can.
The reason that I didn't do research is that I want to buy them, you know, one after the other. So now I'm on two. So it was, yeah. So spreading out, I would like to ask you, I think these things can go together. I think that there's another project that you did with Robot.
Super Robot Mayhem, yeah.
So, yeah, is this intertwined in this universe? It's something completely different?
Completely different, yes. We actually started that about 2 years ago, just done our first collective volume, and literally just come back from the post office from sending out the last batch. Yeah, so that's something I did with a gentleman called Adrian Mersak. Adrian was a blogger. He wrote for a blog himself, which kind of concentrates on Transformers and Mazinga Z, I think it's his big fandom. And he just had an idea where he wanted to do a story, and I said, oh, great, I can imagine something for that. And we kind of went away and did it, really. Worked with a very talented artist called Jack Bourdon, based in Poland. And yeah, it's just really, really just the reaction to it has been really good. So, yeah.
Also, you offered us a lot of merchandise. How come? How did you decide that you're going to do t-shirts as well? Plates? Do we help artists financially? So do you think it supports you to do things, or it was just something that you wanted to have?
Well, there's two kind of reasons, really. One is obviously that people say, I want to see that on a t-shirt. I think it was the first one we did was the Metal t-shirt, which is the black. It's the black cover for the very, very first edition of Metal May Flash that we did back in 2014. And that was the first T-shirt, and people were like, well, I want a T-shirt of it. So we kind of did it. And also, I mean, my background is music, really, prior to kind of writing and self-publishing. And so bands obviously have merchandise. Just kind of, you know, the big issue with kind of comics is that most comic writers aren't making a tremendous amount of money, and any kind of little bit that people can kind of contribute kind of helps us to keep writing, really. That's really the reason why we do it, you know.
Yeah, this is an issue, and I think it is one of the most underappreciated arts. Something that I have in my work is that it's very difficult to have a taste for what is good and what is not good, because you cannot touch it. While, for example, a nice Apple computer, you can, you know, you feel from the style that there has to be something nice here. I think the problem with comic arts is because you flip the pages so fast, the mind cannot say, hey, you know, see how many things, you know, that person has from the page. You have to go and read it again to start appreciating it.
Mm. Comics are very time intensive compared to even writing. I mean, writing can take a long time, but it's not. I mean, to do page probably a day to 2 days for, and depending on who the artist is and you know how experienced they are. Someone like Gary Erskine can probably turn out a page a day, but I think most artists I've spoken to are about you know a page every day or 2 days to get them if they're. I mean, if you it depends on the detail and you know someone like Simeon who does loads of detail, it takes a long time.
I've changed techniques and stuff as I progress. I think when we first started these books, used dozens of layers and stuff. And, I mean, on the plus side, you get beautiful detail and lots of depth of field and stuff with, you know, different blurs and things. But ultimately, it became too time-consuming. So haven't cut corners, but per se, but I've figured out ways of keeping the same kind of detail and look and stuff, but not making so many separate drawings. So it's much better production wise, yeah. Because it can take too long sometimes. Sometimes things you have to speed them up, but not sacrifice the detail.
I think part of that is the better you get at something, the quicker you get as well. You know, it's that old adage, isn't it? What was it they say? Like you know, a businessman approaches a master artist and says, "Why are you charging me, you know, £2,000 for this building design or whatever it is? It only took you a day." And he said, "Well, it took me a lifetime to learn how to draw that in a day." It's time intensive from that point of view, but also then on top of that, you've got all the colouring and everything, you know. And it's expensive as well, because if you think about it, an artist has got to live. So they're working for 2 days and on a page or a day on a page, and they need to be able to live for that day. And really, if you're working on a project, you have to kind of concentrate on that project while you're doing it. Difficult to do it a page here and a page there, because, I mean, artists, one of the things we noticed with Javier's, Jack, I should say, he is very slow, but his art style would change throughout the course of an issue because he was doing it over a long period of time. I mean, for someone like him, who's basically kind of Katsuhiro Otomo, you know, the Akira artist, you know, someone like that, if they change their style, it's not going to be something that you're going to complain about, because it's going to be awesome at the beginning and awesome at the end. But you can notice that if you're looking for it, you can notice that change, you know. So if they do it in one batch, it's a lot easier to be kind of a bit more consistent with it. So they kind of have to dedicate time to be able to sit down and do it. And if you've got bills to pay, sometimes you have to take other jobs, you know. It's a difference between kind of someone like Marvel, where they can kind of, you know, X thousands of pounds to pay an artist up front, and they can kind of wait 6 months to recoup that money on the sales of their comic, to someone who's living hand to mouth. It is challenging to be involved in comics and not, you know, just be dedicated to doing comics and not to do a side job.
Are you both based in Scotland?
No.
I'm down on the south coast, Brighton.
And I'm in the West Country.
I got it wrong then. I think there were many Grant Morrison references, and I somehow tilted to believe that. I have read only his book, actually, Super Good. I don't think I have read many of his.
I tend to, with Grant Morrison, I tend to like his more crunchy. What's the big series he did? One the Matrix was based on. Names have gone out of my head. Completely gone out of my head. What's it called? The Invisibles, that's it. Yeah.
Let me put it on the checklist. Yeah, I think he mentioned it. Let's talk about the UK now. Two things. There's such about the state of the industry. If you have, I'm going to bombard you a little bit. If you have heard of, or if you have been, about Alan Moore's comments on people not growing up, and what's your take on it? So, yeah, how do you feel participating in the scene and stuff like that?
I'll let Sim go first on this one.
How do I feel about participating on the comic scene? Yeah, I mean, it's been...
I saw a picture of you in a signing somewhere when I googled your name.
Yeah, I think that was with Chris Arcadius and Simon Bisley, I think. I think that was in London. Yeah, it's been like, you know, it's been a interesting journey. I think I first started when I first met Jeremy, I think it was 2011, wasn't it? That's where it kind of all sort of kicked off. And like I mentioned before, I mean, Metal Made Flesh, I think for both of us, is kind of like, is in particular, it's kind of guiding me through the comic book stuff, and it's kind of the flagship for me of my artwork and stuff. I mean, the reason I got noticed from Heavy Metal is because they told me later that they liked the style. It reminded them of the early Heavy Metal stuff, which was actually funny because my artwork is kind of inspired by the old school sort of comics and stuff like that, like Mobius and Bilal and artists like French comics and things like that. It kind of came full circle in terms of like the art style. But yeah, I mean, we've done like dozen, like over a dozen conventions and stuff. Well, more than that, actually. It's always fun. I mean, especially at the moment, kind of I miss the conventions and stuff because you know it's a very fun sort of weekends and things like that. And it gives you a good opportunity to sort of catch up and see people and network and things like that. So that's kind of sorely missed at the moment. But overall, I mean, it's a difficult sort of thing to keep positive and keep moving forward and producing new stuff. And yeah, I've enjoyed it. Yeah, I wouldn't go back to the call centres, that's for sure.
I kind of think the comics industry is in a very strange place, and I kind of think like, when it comes to like Alan Moore's comments about Lost Superheroes and things, I've never really been a big, not since I was a kid anyway, been a big superhero kind of follower. I really love Alan Moore's work, the way he kind of deconstructed superhero comics and through Watchmen and Swamp Thing and stuff like that. It's just amazing. I kind of agree with him. I think there's not enough effort gone into winning younger readers as there is into winning 40-year-old people who like us.
I'm that in that group, yeah.
I think there's a lot of energy by people like DC and stuff into, I think was it the boss of DC said, I make comics for 40-year-old men with lots of disposable income. So, but I think I'd like to see more. See, it's funny, when it comes to comics that I read nowadays, I tend to find myself reading a lot more manga because I think the stories in manga are more interesting to me.
I think it makes perfect sense.
I think they cover kind of subjects. They have lots of ideas about things. And I think, to a certain degree, I think, there are great... I think the content of manga is more interesting generally. There's loads and loads of drop, loads of rubbish manga out there, about schoolgirls and all that kind of stuff. That doesn't interest me, but I think there is kind of a group of manga artists or manga writers who are doing very, very interesting work, which we don't get over here. And I kind of think if we could put the writers with some of the artists, because I think the art style and the narration in Western comics is generally better, not always, but generally better than kind of manga from an artistic point of view, But I tend to find myself kind of more drawn towards the kinds of stories they tell and the kind of subject matters they cover, really.
I swear you're learning Chinese and not Japanese, if I am.
Chinese? Well, yeah, I've got a degree in Chinese. I actually went to the university.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, took a degree, but yeah. Interestingly, one of the things I was really excited to tackle was Chinese comics, but they're generally not very good. I hate to say, a lot of the Chinese comics basically just rip off Japanese stuff, and they do it. They rip off the most popular stuff that Japanese does, which is like the moe, the cute little girls, which doesn't really interest me, and I think a lot of it is just not very good. There are some good ones. I struggle to think of it off the top of my head, but there's a guy, Paul Gravett, who's kind of an expert on Far Eastern comics, but he's pointed out some really good Chinese. There's a really good comic which is drawn by it's a robot, and I think it's written by a French writer and a Chinese artist. The writer's name is Marizano. The artist's name is Shang, S-H-A-N-G. The comic is called Sam. It's published by Cinebook, but it's kind of the art in it.
I felt that while we're talking, Cinebook would pop up at some point.
Okay.
At some point, I felt like someone's going to mention it. I took note of it. Like, if nobody does, I'm going to ask.
But yeah, the artist and the art and stories is absolutely great. I think they've got this four volumes out, which is, and it just really reminds me of Tech on Concrete, which is an anime produced back in the mid 2000s. Kind of like a bit artsy kind of anime. But yeah, but this comic is like that. It's just great. Really, really good. Love Cinebook. Yeah, amazing. Amazing publisher.
I heard about them in an interview with a local publisher, and I was telling him I don't find many European stuff.
Humanoid's another publisher. Well, obviously they publish the it's not Incal by Jodorowsky, it's his other one.
Meta Barons,
yes. Yeah.
I heard that as well. Mm. Kind of wrapping up because people might not be with us for so long. COVID questions. How it has affected you personally in your work. And if you saw what happened in Diamond Distribution in the US and the parallel network that the independent shops did, what's your thought about this? Your thoughts?
I mean, I think for me it's been like a journey of becoming more confident in my work, and especially with like the conventions and things like that. You have to learn, in order to be successful at those, I think for the most part you have to project confidence and sort of sell your work, but not sort of in a pushy salesman way. And a lot of the time we get into conversations with people and they would kind of gravitate towards the work based on sort of shared appreciation for various sort of genres and films and comics and things like that. I think the confidence thing translates as well with when you're pitching work or people approaching you to work. You have to, you can't be sort of second guessing yourself, or you've got to have a project an aura of confidence and say that, you know, convince them that you can deliver and stuff. And then when you go away, one of the things that I kind of tackled earlier or dealt with earlier on when I first started was I'd get very consumed with anxiety at the beginning of the project. I'd kind of get there and I was like, I'd start doubting myself, but you have to kind of, I learned that you have to sort of push past that. And then once you start working and the pages start coming out, then you kind of get that sort of rush and you can see that it's coming together and you kind of recognize that, you know, that's going to work. Yeah, you have to kind of, yeah, there's lots of things to be learned, you know. It's just, you know, you learn by mistakes and you have to make them in order to recognize them. I mean, it's a difficult journey. I forgot what the second part of the question was, actually.
It was about diamonds, I think.
About what?
Diamonds, the largest store stopped distributing.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that in the US, the individual shops, they did something that you buy the stuff digitally, and when they opened up, you could go and get a physical copy.
Oh, yeah.
I think that if you change the distribution, then the medium will change. It's, you cannot totally distinguish them, because, like, you could, I don't know, you could publish something in installments. After someone buys them, they can go and get a hard copy. I don't think we have explored, we will see in the future, but this one will.
So for me, I much prefer, you know, I'm an old fuddy-duddy, so I like physical comics. I don't really read comics online or digitally. I understand the desire not to have a whole house full of books, just kind of gathering dust after you've read them, but I much prefer having a physical object in my hands to do it. So from that, you know, I understand that times are changing and people like digital comics and things like that. So I think it's very difficult for comic shops to survive in this environment. I mean, everyone's struggling with COVID and everything, you know. I think it's interesting that DC and Diamond have cut ties. We looked into distributing through Diamond before, and I think for a new publisher, it's very difficult unless you've got a lot of money. You know, because you've got to back at the promotion. Diamond said they would accept, you know, basically when you go to Diamond, do you know this already? I don't know if you've talked about this on your show at all, whether people would be interested in this kind of thing, but I can go into that kind of thing if you like.
We haven't discussed it. We haven't someone who's close to it. So please go ahead.
So we spoke to Diamond good 3 years ago, actually, very shortly after Metal May Flesh 1. The first Metal May Flesh is probably not very suitable for Diamond because they're a comics distributor mainly. That's fine, understand that. But they were very keen on the graphic novels, some of the other stuff that we've done. You generally have a minimum number of orders you have to meet with Diamond. So they basically put it, once you're accepted and once they're happy with the print quality and everything like that, you have to then guarantee that you're going to produce a minimum number of books. So then they put an advert into the catalogue and that goes out to comic shops, and then comic shops decide what they want to buy from that comic catalogue, and they give you about 3 months to fulfil those orders. The only real way you can do that, you know, with money and everything, is to buy from somewhere like China, which basically is shipping it over. It's a huge expense, and you don't actually receive the money until some way down the line. Obviously, Diamond take a quite sizable percentage cut of any deliveries and, you know, any sales and things like that. So in the end, we kind of felt, well, you know, we don't have the cash flow to be able to go that route at this stage. So we've kind of kept doing Kickstarters, and it served us well, but it does mean that our reach is kind of limited. You know, we're still small. We're never going to be kind of like in every comic shop until we can find somebody who would kind of back us and go behind us and say, well, you know, we'll front the money and be able to put it all together and put you in touch with so-and-so and get a marketing budget together and all that kind of stuff, you know. So that's really why we're kind of quite small, but it's also a challenge for comic producers generally. And the big issue is that Diamond, because they are the only game in town, can really afford to take what they want in terms of the cut. If there was a more competitive market and comic shops were able to buy from different places and didn't then have to meet all kinds of quotas for in order to be able to get access to Marvels, I think things would possibly be a bit easier to break into the direct market and comic shops in the States and things like that. Because really, this is the other things why you learn from Diamond, is that where the markets are. And the really big markets are in the United States, and they've got so many thousand comic shops compared to just over 100 or so in the UK, you know. So a friend of mine, a guy called Stuart Gold, who runs a printer, was trying to do a UK direct market by approaching all the comic shops. But the thing is, so he was going to kind of do a Diamond for the UK, but the thing is, there's not enough shops in the UK to really kind of support that model. You really need to use...
Okay, I didn't know that, yeah.
Yeah. So unless you've got the backing of someone like, you know, DC Thompson or, you know, 2000 AD, where they've already got distribution in the States and everything, it's quite difficult to, you know, because once you factored in the postage of getting a, you know, maybe three books for a comic shop in Scotland, you don't really make any money at all. So you have to be prepared to lose a lot of money. So for us, we've tried to do things the kind of Kickstarter route and also directly at conventions. And then obviously we at conventions, you do meet comic shop owners and they will come up to you and say, well, can I take 10 books of this? And we then kind of work it out like that. And that kind of works out a bit more realistic to be able to get out there. We'd love to go with Diamond, but I think we need really kind of a bigger fish behind us to really do that properly with a full budget and all that, you know.
Or something to change, which now we live in times of change, so we don't know. Okay.
Exactly, yes.
So, last one, which was the first comic book you read and which was the last one for both of you? And if there is something that I haven't asked you and you would like our audience to know about you?
I remember I used to read the Dark Horse and Aliens versus Predator and Terminator and stuff. I used to really like the covers of those. Probably something before that, but just off the top of my head, those are the earliest sort of comic books I used to like serious, like science fiction ones. And the last ones I read, I originally picked up, I haven't got through all of it, Blade Runner 2019, which is like a side story, which is supposed to be in the same timeline as the original Blade Runner movie, but focusing on different characters. So I think it runs parallel to the original story. And and this one's Heavy Metal.
Hey.
That's mine.
So the first one I ever did was Transformers number 1 in about 1984. I think possibly... So how many come?
You just mind me, probably before that there was was it Action Force it was called, or it was the UK version of G.I. Joe? It's all coming back to me now. I remember there was a really great issue with the character, do you know, the ninjas, the Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow?
Yeah.
One particular issue where it had no text because Snake Eyes never speaks. And it was all about him sneaking into a base, and Storm Shadow was hot on his heels and stuff. Yeah, I just can't remember the specifics of it, but I remember that being really like wowed by that comic because it was all visual storytelling. Yeah, it's great.
I remember that one as well. Weirdly, just you saying it, suddenly, really pulled back memories. I think that was after Transformers 1, though. I think it was after 84.
Yeah, maybe at some point. Yeah. I think it was Larry, just after Larry Hanna did it. My old friend.
So the last one I read is Blood on the Tracks by Shuzo Oshimi. He's the guy who kind of wrote Haku no Hana, which is I don't want to go on about that because I wax lyrical about it all day. But Blood on the Tracks is another kind of mad story about an abusive mother. It doesn't sound very funny or fun, and it's kind of a dark, twisted tale, which I think is great.
That was all from me. I don't know if you have any future plans. I forgot to ask. Like, we talked about the present and the past. Like, what are the next things that you're going to release? And with that, I think we should shut up, because if someone is with us for 40, 50 minutes, it doesn't happen. It's like 10 people. So, future plans.
We're kind of talking about relighting the old torch without my flesh, because it's been sort of out of... We've not been working on it. We've been doing our own thing. So we're thinking of getting the band back together. I'm actually doing some artwork this weekend. I'm going to hopefully release it next week. Like a new image.
From Cyber.
Yeah, I've got another few things. So watch this space.
So Metal Make Flesh 4, that'll be 2021. What else am I working on? So pretty much sequels, really. So Mayhem 2, Bearlands 2, which is kind of a zombie bears, fun little zombie comic. And then just, writing others. Got other stories I've been kind of writing, more prose, science fiction, Black Mirror-y type stuff. Under various pseudonyms. So some of those are out now, which I'm not going to say who they are. And other ones will be coming out soon. But that's pretty much what I'm doing.
Okay. Also, you can find all of the Metal Made Flesh content on metalmadeflesh.com. You can follow my artwork, and I've got a website with gallery prints and whatnot. It's Aston Art. metalmayflesh.co.uk, and or you can find me on Instagram, just astonart, and that's it.
So yeah, metalmayflesh.com again for all the books, subversivecomics.com for Mayhem, Zombie Bears, at Subversive Comics on Instagram.